Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Speaking of Resilience podcast. I'm Kate Madigan with the Michigan Climate Action Network, or MICAN. This podcast is also brought to you by the Groundwork Center. In today's episode, we have three incredible leaders from the state of Michigan talking about climate and clean energy. We have the Lieutenant Governor, Garland Gilchrist, the Director of the Department of Environment, Great Lakes and Energy, Liesl Clark, and MPSC, or Michigan Public Service Commission, Commissioner Catherine Peretic. I had the opportunity to introduce them and to moderate a discussion with them at the Michigan Climate and Clean Energy Summit on May 24th. In this session and in this episode, we talked about the governor's climate executive order and other climate commitments that the state of Michigan has made, how Michigan is centering equity in this work, and we get into some specifics about how state agencies are working to transition to carbon neutrality. Here's our episode with Michigan leaders talking about leading on climate solutions.
Kate, thank you so much. Make sure I'm not muted. Okay, thank you so much, Kate, for that introduction and for your leadership with the Michigan Climate Action Network. Jim, thank you for the work you're doing leading these sessions. I also want to acknowledge Michigan Public Service Commissioner Catherine Peretic and Liesl Clark, the Director of our Department of Environment, Great Lakes and Energy. I am so thrilled to be here with you today. This is an issue that is near and dear to my heart, not merely as a public servant and as Lieutenant Governor, but as a dad. You know, I think about what are the values that I can, alongside my wife, instill in our children so that they recognize their responsibility to be good stewards of all of the blessings that we have access to here in the great state of Michigan. So, you know, I bring greetings on behalf of Governor Whitmer as well. And, you know, when we took office two plus years ago, we made it clear during the first 24 hours of our administration that environmental issues were going to be addressed directly, head on the first day. We joined the U.S. Climate Alliance and committed to the goals of the Paris Climate Accords. You know, we knew we needed help to fill the void in national leadership that existed at that time. So we stepped up, we stood tall. And initially, very early on, we created the Department of Environment, Great Lakes and Energy, which we call EAGLE. And it remains laser focused on issues like combating climate change and cleaning up drinking water. Most notably, we began the work of the Interagency Environmental Justice Response Teams and the Advisory Council on Environmental Justice, because again, we want to make sure that we are centering the experiences of the people most vulnerable and most impacted in our policymaking processes. That first, you know, set of initial bold actions really set the tone, and we have not stopped since, because the science is clear and the message is urgent. The Earth's climate is now changing faster than it ever has. We now have less than 10 years really to reduce the harmful impacts of climate change. We're facing a global climate crisis that will directly impact our environment, our economy, our residents, with communities of color, low-income and low-wealth Michiganders suffering the most disproportionately. Last year, the governor did announce the My Healthy Climate Plan and signed two executive actions to put Michigan on a path towards a 100% carbon-neutral future. To ensure steady progress towards this goal and to prevent irreparable harm, we also set goals to reduce greenhouse gas emissions both by 2025 and another set of goals by 2030. This action made Michigan a national leader when it came to our commitments to addressing climate change. Decarbonization is key to mitigating the future impacts of climate change and enabling Michigan to take full advantage of the ongoing global energy transformation, from the jobs that it will generate for our skilled workforce, the protections that it will provide for our natural resources, and the savings it will bring to communities and Michiganders everywhere. We owe it to our children and our children's children to leave them a cleaner, safer, healthier, more accessible world. So our plan is being developed by council, and that council includes our office, the Department of Environment, Great Lakes and Energy, 11 state departments, tribal nation governments, 13 members of the public who have experience in environment, business, and labor, and health. The plan will not only identify and recommend opportunities for effective implementation of emissions reduction strategies, but it will also focus on creating targeted solutions for communities disproportionately impacted by climate change and the transition we're making to a clean energy future. This council is going to work hand in hand with the Climate Justice Brain Trust, a group of national leaders in environmental justice, to ensure that impacted communities are considered and empowered at every step of the way. We also launched the Energy Transition Impact Project, ETIP, to ensure that we plan with communities and workers on what their economic transition will look like as we move to a more sustainable and prosperous energy future. For far too long, there's been this misconception, this false choice, that preparing for this future comes at the expense of economic growth and good paying jobs. That choice is not binary. It's not either or. It's both and. And the health of our economy, we have to recognize that it is inextricably linked to the health of our people, and something that we've seen during this pandemic, and also to the health of our planet. In the past, big changes have created winners and losers. And frankly, the government didn't get involved till too late, until after the fact, and the damage was done. So this time, we are prioritizing putting people, putting communities, putting workers first. We must ensure that the people who are threatened by a change to a more sustainable future and who have been historically disproportionately impacted by climate change are in a position to benefit from the transition to that new future. Now, look, I used to be a community organizer in my career professionally, and you learn that the people who are closest to the problem, who are directly impacted by the problem, these are the people who have the answers. So we must have them at the table in order to get answers that will work. So ETIP is going to identify communities that will be impacted by, you know, coal plant closures and ICE, internal combustion engine vehicle production, and work to minimize those impacts and the dislocation that comes with it, including loss of employment, loss of property tax revenues from municipalities, and other related community services that were associated with the existence or the physical presence of these, industries. And in addition to ETIP, we're also focused on retraining and upskilling our workforce to be prepared for the jobs of today and tomorrow. You know, recently we launched two big programs, Michigan Reconnect and Futures for Frontliners. These programs offer tuition-free pathways to higher education and skills training to all Michiganders over the age of 25 who have served on the front line of this pandemic and who are ready to get trained in a high demand, high wage skill. But even with these great programs, we still have a lot of work to do to ensure that we bring everyone with us into this future. We've also tried to do our best as an administration to lead by example. So since 2019, we've been working to reduce our own energy use and move to carbon neutrality in state facilities with goalposts along the way to mark our progress. This past Earth Day, we announced that state-owned facilities would utilize 100% renewable energy by 2025. The energy purchase will expand our utilities' renewable portfolios rather than simply rerouting existing renewable energy that's already being generated. So we're really excited about that real commitment. In addition to moving to 100% renewable energy for state-owned buildings, the state also launched a team to identify state government's potential solar footprint and develop and implement a plan to deploy solar across our state-owned lands and properties to help deploy solar across the state as quickly as possible while saving the state money on our electric bills. Additionally, this year, the governor proposed an executive budget recommendation with more than $80 million focused on addressing climate change. We are ready to both invest in and do the work. I am constantly inspired every day by the generation of young people who really have stepped up to fight for a more robust, sustainable, and livable planet. Real change requires leaders across the country to work hand in hand with these young visionary activists. Together, we can and will make positive, long-lasting changes. The critical work is just now really, really starting in earnest with that collaboration, and it has to continue because there's so much work to do. We have to rise to this challenge. We have no choice. And where our administration can act, know that we will, swiftly, surely, and smartly. As an elected leader during this time, the impacts of climate change have become front and center in our nation and all over the world and in our state. And I'm eager to work closely with everyone who wants to build a stronger future for our future generations. Fighting climate change is good for our public health. It's good for our people. It's good for our environment. And it's good for our economy. We cannot afford to wait any longer when it comes to saving our planet or being good stewards of our natural resources. When we take these actions, again, I'm thinking about my own three children and really all the generations of Michiganders who I know will come before us and be even better stewards than we are. Everyone that's joining us today, is doing the work to stand tall for Michigan. Thank you for doing so and for doing this in everything that you do. And I want you to know that Governor Whitmer and I, we have your back now, we have your back tomorrow, and we always will. We are in this together. We are better connected and we are stronger and we can do more because this last year has shown me that we can do anything when we do it together. So thank you all so much for having me here and please enjoy the rest of the summit.
Thank you so much, Lieutenant Governor. Do you have time for one quick question?
I do.
Okay, great. I think I just, you know, you talked so much about all of the things that your administration has done this year and in the midst of the COVID crisis. And so I guess I just wanted to ask, you know, if you could give us a glimpse into what it's like working virtually in this time and in the middle of, you know, the COVID pandemic, where that rightfully so has had to be the priority and has really been the main thing that you've been able to work on in your administration and the governor. We've also seen a lot of bold leadership on climate. So I guess just if you could give us a glimpse what it's like to work virtually and how you balance the priorities and how big of a priority is climate in your administration.
Yeah. So on working virtually, I actually early, at a different point in my career had a job where I worked virtually full time for 3 years. So this actually has not been a new exercise for me. And as with parents who've had the ability to work virtually, that has been both a blessing and a burden in terms of having to manage. I have twin 7-year-olds, I have a baby girl, you know, it's been a lot on a lot of parents. So I very much empathize with that. You know, climate, there's a reason why we took action on day one of our administration. It's because this is existential. And, you know, when we think about what makes Michigan, Michigan, it is literally due to our natural resources and their importance, their primacy, their value, and their beauty. And so for our administration, it really has, it was heartbreaking to see predecessors not truly investing in how we can be good stewards and how we can build a more sustainable future that changes our relationship with our resources here in the state of Michigan. And so we really have centered that. And even within in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, we recognize that environmental factors have played into the vulnerability of many communities. You know, I live in the city of Detroit. I'm speaking with you from there right now. I live next door to the zip code that has the highest prevalence of asthma and upper respiratory infection in the state of Michigan. That's because there are a lot of polluters located in one place. And so you have a lot of people in Southwest Detroit, a lot of people in Dearborn who are breathing air that is not only making them potentially making them sick directly, but also increasing their susceptibility to all sorts of negative health outcomes. And so as part of the work on the Michigan Coronavirus Task Force on Racial Disparities, which I chair, we've worked to connect with the Environmental Justice Advisory Council that was established under EOLA and the leadership of Dr. Regina Strong to be able to see how we can, you know, from a policy perspective and a program perspective, work to reduce the impact of that pollution while also exploring how can we just stop it in the first place. And so these are the ways that climate change and the impact of environmental concerns and environmental justice intersect with every action and every decision that we have to make. And so the COVID crisis was no different in that regard. And I think, I hope that that's a demonstration that this work matters and it will always be important because it is always present. It will never not be present, right? Like we're always going to have our resources and what we choose to do in relationship to them will impact us in either a good way or a bad way. And so we're going to work as an administration to create the conditions for people, for partners, for organizations, for companies, institutions to choose a positive interaction.
Great. Thank you so much. And, you know, thank you again for joining us. It was really an honor to have you here with us today.
Thank you, Kate. Everyone be safe.
And I now have the pleasure of introducing our next two guests. Liesl Clark, Director of the Department of Environment, Great Lakes and Energy, or EGLE, and Catherine Peretic, Commissioner with the Michigan Public Service Commission, or MPSC. So welcome to you both. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Kate. So glad to join you.
And I just want to address off the top that questions or comments about the pending Line 5 case before the MPSC are off limits. MPSC commissioners cannot discuss open cases before them. So if any of you are wondering, any viewers are wondering why we're not diving in, that's into Line 5 questions. That is why. So now I get to ask, I have this, you know, opportunity to ask you some questions. I'm so excited that you're here. Director Clark, I'd love to start with you. You were at our first Michigan Climate Action Summit right after the start, right after you started in this role. And you said from the stage that the governor is all in on climate. And then since that time, and even before, we've seen her commitment, especially with actions to shut down Line 5, the executive actions that Lieutenant Governor Gilchrist just talked about. But this executive action in particular happened in September. And we were expecting that announcement at last year's summit before it was canceled from the COVID crisis. So I think it's just really important to take this opportunity to celebrate that and to look back and acknowledge the significance of that executive action. So I'd love to ask for you to talk about the executive order, the executive actions, how it has changed the way our state is addressing climate, and if there are other climate-related priorities that you want to highlight from the beginning of this conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kate. And I do really appreciate the opportunity to join you. It was wonderful to join you right after becoming part of the administration back in 2019. And I will say, it's wonderful to see the progress since then. I think that that gathering was an opportunity, I think, for everyone just to feel a little bit lighter about the work that, well, it's still in front of us, we were now able to speak to. And I think, you know, the Lieutenant Governor's comments really resonated with me in two ways. One is the incredible urgency. And I think we all acknowledge that urgency. The second is that we are on the path. We have lots to do, but we're on that path and proud to be working on it all together. So, of course, the governor announced our decarbonization goal for the state, as well as the Council on Climate Solutions. And we are thrilled at EGLE to be convening the Council on Climate Solutions, who will then advise the department on the My Healthy Climate Plan. So, as usual, within state government, lots of kind of pieces that need to fit together there, but important ones. And I know many of your participants have been involved in the Council on Climate Solutions in one way or the other. Potentially, we've got some folks that are sitting on it, perhaps also either leading a work group or participating in a work group. For those who might not be quite as close to it, just to make sure you've got the right frame, you can find more information at michigan.gov/climate. So we'll start there just so you have somewhere to go in case I talk too fast, which is a common ill affliction of mine. Equity is a lens that we place on all of our climate work. And so, again, you heard this from Lieutenant Governor in his comments. And I just want to say that that is really our starting point for the work that we're doing on climate at the state. The council then has five work groups that are having conversations and supporting the work of the council. So they are energy distribution, transmission, storage, generation. And that is co-chaired by wonderful Commissioner Peretic, who's joining me here, and you'll hear from in just a minute. Mobility, buildings, energy intensive users, and natural working lands. And so those are just the way that we've broken down the efforts and the work groups who some of you are participating in. And then the council meetings are organized around those big buckets as well. On top of that, we've had a couple of listening sessions already, and there'll be more public meetings coming up in the fall. And thank you again to anyone who may have participated in those public meetings. That's a really important input. Of course, there'll be discussions about the My Healthy Climate Plan as well. So there's lots of different pieces in play that I think are really important to make sure that we meet that urgency and that we're all working along that path. And the final thing I want to mention on the council is just to reiterate Lieutenant Governor's point about the brain trust. So we've convened five leaders who are able to support the work of the council with that equity lens to make sure that, again, equity is not a leftover, but something that's a primary focus for all the effort of the council. And so that group is a really important input to the effort that we've got ongoing. So on top of climate, through the council work, there is, of course, a priority placed on it, which you can see from the governor's budget recommendations. Again, like Lieutenant Governor mentioned, the fact that the governor in her executive budget recommendations put her money where her mouth is, so to speak, with highlighting climate That demonstrates that support and that purpose. And we're excited about what that's going to look like going forward now that we're budget process has evolved a little bit up until now. And then the coupling of that plus the opportunity for additional federal dollars, I think, is really going to be able to launch us more quickly down that path.
Great. Thank you so much. And question for Commissioner Peretick, you are taking on a leadership role with the Council on Climate Solutions, and also you were just appointed in January to join the Michigan Public Service Commission. For those who don't know, there are three commissioners on the Public Service Commission. So would you give us an update on your work on the Council on Climate Solutions and also help us understand, for those who don't know, you know, how the MPSC is really plays a role in helping the state achieve these goals?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. And thank you so much for having me on this panel. And I'm really excited about the programming for the summit. It's really, really impressive lineups over the next few days. And also a thank you to Lieutenant Governor Gilchrist for the warm introduction and for setting the stage for our discussion so well. So, like Kate mentioned, I do want to preface my remarks by noting that the Michigan Public Service Commission acts only as a collective body, and I am only one of three commissioners, so I cannot speak for the commission as a whole. The views I express today are mine and do not necessarily reflect the views of the commission or other commissioners. With that said, I can get into the meat of your question. So the Michigan Public Service Commission, you know, our goal is to serve the citizens of Michigan by ensuring safe, reliable, affordable energy and telecommunication services. We're not a climate regulator, but there are several aspects of the commission's work that do intersect with climate and do have direct and indirect impacts to addressing climate change. And you know, there's a natural transformation in the energy industry that's happening. The energy transition really is showing that there's becoming a natural preference for cleaner, greener energy, you know, as a result of climate change and the need for cleaner air and natural resources. And now there are economics that are able to drive that change as well. So really interesting to see that progression, and so exciting to be a part of it. With regards to the Climate Council, I think Director Clark did a great job of the overview for it. So really the Climate Council is meant to act in an advisory capacity to the governor and to EGLE, that Director Clark leads, for implementation of the My Healthy Climate Plan. So, really working on that action plan for Michigan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and really transition towards that economy-wide carbon neutrality that we're working for. So, Director Clark really emphasized the connection with the Brain Trust, which I think is incredibly important. And I did want to just outline the two objectives, because I think it's really important to stay grounded in what we're actually trying to accomplish with this Climate Council. So the biggest thing is really, the two biggest things, there are two big things that we're trying to work for. So recommending opportunities for the development and effective implementation of emissions reduction strategies. So again, that's working towards that goal of carbon neutral by 2050. Trying to set minor goals along the way for how to actually effectively get there, these checkpoints along the way. But then equally, our second objective is to really resolve that impact disparities across Michigan and recommend targeted solutions for communities who've been disproportionately impacted by the changing climate. So in terms of Michigan Public Service Commission's participation on this, the chair of the commission. So, as Kate mentioned, there are three of us commissioners. I am the newest, having started in January, and our chair, Chair Dan Scripps, he is actually on the Climate Council, and I am co-chair alongside Douglas Jester, Applied Lakes Energy, of one of those five work groups. I'm on the one with the long name, the Energy Production, Transmission, Distribution, and Storage. So the way that we're structuring this Climate Council is that, you know, we're starting off with setting the stage, right? That like let's have this introduction for the status of where we are currently, so we know where we need to go to actually achieve these goals. How far do we have to walk? How big do these recommendations have to be? And where do these interim points have to be along the way? So we're setting the stage, lots of presentations by major stakeholders. And then we actually get into the deliberation and decision-making meetings where we address these issues that were determined from this first phase. And then we're actually going to, in the third phase, try to resolve our differences, package that idea list for presentation to the council. So it's been a really, really exciting process so far. A really broad range of work group participants, which I think is so important. Having a diversity in industry, a diversity in opinion, a diversity in, background, where you're coming from, your knowledge. That's what we need to really be working from, to be able to come up with these incredibly ambitious and incredibly important goals and guidelines and recommendations for the council. And there's been a lot of activity on it so far. So I'm already seeing so many great and innovative ideas being generated. I can't wait to see where we end up at the end of this process.
Thank you. And, speaking of diverse backgrounds and preparing for this, I was looking at your bio and I was really impressed that you worked on the Juno and Curiosity spacecraft missions with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So sounds like your engineering background comes in very handy in a lot of these conversations as well. And thanks. I wanted to ask you a question, Director Clark. And also point out that, or reiterate that this report is going to be concluding the end of this year. So that all of this work is very short timeline because of the urgency that we're in. I wanted to ask you if you could also talk about the other actions that the Whitmer administration has taken and that departments announced in April, which the Lieutenant Governor mentioned, in particular, the 100% renewable energy power for all state buildings. And then I had a question in the chat, if you could also address how energy efficiency is tied in with these goals as well.
Great, yes, thanks, I'm happy to, Kate. And we are literally having this conversation with a rocket scientist. So when people say, it must be rocket science, I just call Catherine because I know where to go to get my rocket science. So I'm so pleased. I didn't say the question in the chat, but I'm so pleased. And when I put together a couple of thoughts around the steps the state was taking, I started with efficiency. So whoever put that question in the chat, I'm feeling you, because we need to do everything. We need to start with efficiency in everything that we do. And so there has been some groundwork laid within state buildings for efficiency, but work around continued lighting and automation work for heating and cooling is a huge component of the work that DTMB has been leading. Now, a chunk of state facilities are owned by DTMB, and then a chunk are also leased separately. And so that's a place where DTMB is doing the work on the state-owned facilities and then also working with departments where they lease or hold other properties. So, and if you aren't aware, the secondary complex in Lansing put in a combined heat and power system, actually with the ARRA dollars from back in, I think they did it in like 2010, was ARRA dollars in 2008. So that's a whole nother fun topic about chillers and types of engineering questions you would have for Catherine, not Liesl. But Liesl can tell you that it happened. Something to mention. As Lieutenant Governor and Kate also mentioned, of course, that 100% commitment to renewable purchase by 2025 was a very important stake in the ground, again, from a DTMB perspective. And then DTMB is also working on electric vehicle purchasing. So we do have electric vehicles in the fleet. We need to have more. We need to have the charging infrastructure that's necessary in order to support them. We have some of that. We need to have more of that. So those are all things going on in the DTMB world. I suppose I should say at the outset that I am so grateful that when we talk about climate within this administration, it's a climate and all things focus. We started meetings. We had a cabinet sub-working group early in 2019 that involved almost all of the other departments because of the way that everybody touches climate. And so I feel so lucky as director of EGLE, to be able to tell you about this wonderful work that's happening by my colleagues. And so the DTMB list is very much being headed by Bram over at DTMB. He's been a natural leader on this topic. It's something he feels passionate about. Likewise, hopping over to LEO, Labor and Economic Opportunity, there's a lot of work happening there around workforce, again, as the LG mentioned, as we consider the needs of a transitioning workforce. For example, if you simply take mobility, there's an expectation that transitioning from internal combustion engines to battery electric vehicles could orphan a sizable chunk of that workforce. And of course, as we all know, we have a sizable chunk of manufacturing auto-related workforce here in Michigan. And so that's something that LEO's been thinking about and working actively through some of the programs like the Frontliners program that Lieutenant Governor mentioned, some of the other efforts with community colleges to make sure that there are training opportunities available. Also, LEO, the Council on Future Mobility and Electrification. Of course, this is an important discussion around that intersection of advanced mobility, and the Climate Council has been working with that council. We created overlap between the two entities so that they can work in parallel. We don't want to recreate work between climate and mobility, but we want to make sure that they are very much interconnected. As this group knows well, climate solutions are mobility solutions, and mobility solutions are climate solutions. Now that we see mobility from a U.S. perspective surpassing power generation from an emissions perspective, it's really critical that we keep this work lined up. Also, our friends at the Michigan Economic Development Corporation have been focused very much on how do they think about climate, not only as attracting businesses that are active doing work in this space, but also catapulting from Michigan's forward-looking perspective on climate to help actually attract businesses. That all being done with the fact that we've got private industry who are leaders around climate work, as is also well noted by this group. You know, it's interesting, you don't think of it a lot, but Corrections, Heidi Washington of Corrections has been doing great work on climate. She's been working on a green prisons project for quite some time, working on solar arrays, et cetera. Now, of course, the last year and the COVID pandemic created other priorities to bubble up. But this is something that, you know, even in Corrections, there's been an opportunity to move forward. Our friends at Department of Natural Resources have been doing a ton of work around climate, from doing solar deployment on their own buildings to figuring out how to do solar deployment on state lands, to moving forward EV infrastructure at state parks. They're moving on all cylinders there. Lieutenant Governor mentioned Treasury. The Energy Transition Impact Project is a very important project to consider the transitioning of energy resources and that what that does to communities. And that's very much from a fiscal perspective, but also what is that impact on workers? And then how do we get on the front of that and make sure that we're helping people transition to something? So that's been an important effort led by Treasury, and they've been having good conversations in Michigan and also learning a lot from similar offices in other parts of the country. At EGLE, there's just a bunch of work in this space, and I don't want to go on forever, so I'm just going to give you some highlights. Of course, with our air quality work, we continue to see decrease in emissions, but again, we know there's more work to do here. And so focusing on that ozone effort and seeing what we can do to continue that downward trajectory, we're supporting our friends at the Public Service Commission, working on their integrated resource planning and making sure that there is an environmental justice angle to that. Our friends in the materials management world are working very hard on advancing recycling so that we're thinking about climate issues with a full circle. Office of Climate and Energy has a leadership position with the council work and with the creation of the My Healthy Climate Plan, as well as with Catalyst Communities. We run the Charge Up Michigan program, which was started by studying MDOT data and mapping where charging infrastructure is necessary in the state, and then targeting VW settlement dollars to these locations, and then hopefully additional dollars if that ends up being where the federal government goes. I'm really proud of this program because I think it's a really unique structure. So to be grounded in that data of where do we see from an end-up perspective, our transportation patterns, but then targeting the money in a third way. So a third VW settlement as the initial support for it, a third private infrastructure. So private money, who wants to see that charging station deployed, and we'll see the immediate benefit of having people using that charging station, and then a third utility dollars. We have some pretty aggressive utility programs for EV infrastructure deployment. And so making sure that we're taking advantage of all of that and coupling it together, I think it's a really exciting structure. And then I'll just leave you with one of my favorites, our EV school bus program. So this is, again, a place where we were able to use VW settlement dollars to offset the difference between, for a new bus, between a diesel bus and potentially an EV bus, because they were substantially more at the time that we kicked off this program. And so then partnering with local health departments, we can begin to see public health outcomes for kids right away, so they're not standing in those diesel fumes. And then also begin to have real world experiences between the local utilities and the school system, so that we can see that vehicle to grid deployment. So anyway, enough, but lots of exciting programs happening at the state.
Yeah, thank you, Director Clark. That is a lot. There is a lot going on, and would love to dive into all of that. But thank you for that great overview. And I wanted to ask you, Commissioner Peretick, about the part that Director Clark mentioned about how EGLE and the MPSC are now working to include environmental justice and health impacts into the planning process that utilities like DTE and consumers need to submit the integrated resource plans. Can you talk about that and how that, why that's significant and how that might change the work, these plans moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so important to always really just keep a lens on environmental justice and environmental justice and on health impacts when making any decisions. And you'll also notice that one of the two objectives of the Council on Climate Solutions that I mentioned in the answer to the last question is specifically for this, resolving those impact disparities and targeting solutions for communities disproportionately impacted by the changing climate. I think it's so important and just almost, obvious to be doing this, because, the transition to clean energy really does help all communities and improves health impacts across the board. Like Director Clark mentioned, and like you just mentioned, Kate, we are now working with the utilities, especially in regards to their IRP process, to look at environmental justice, as well as we issued an order recently that requires utilities to run their IRP models to show what it would take to achieve the governor's climate executive directive. Lots of times information, just understanding the information and how it impacts your system, that can drive changes. And just being able to understand what that would look like and have the utilities actually see what that would look like in terms of their IRP models. Our legal jurisdiction at the MPSC is limited, but this is one way where we're able to start placing some impact or emphasis on improving health impacts across all communities. We're also updating Michigan's integrated resource planning parameters to take into account the goals of the energy transition. I do think it's important to note that the clean energy transition is also good for business. All of our Michigan utilities are far surpassed the clean energy goals established by our legislature to this point, and are developing plans that accelerate the decarbonization even faster than what's in statute. And we just need to make sure that environmental justice stays in the same lens, because the industry is now realizing clean energy transition is good for business. So is environmental justice. So is keeping these communities, these impacted communities at the front of mind. And I did just want to talk very briefly about two more items. One is on the energy waste reduction. So going back to efficiency, like the question mentioned and like Director Clark talked about, we at the Commission, we have an energy waste reduction collaborative because, really the cheapest and cleanest energy is the energy that you don't use. And what we have found as a result of this energy waste reduction effort that for every dollar spent on energy efficiency programs, customers save around $4 in avoided energy costs. That's the strict economics, $4 in avoided energy costs. That has nothing to do with the externalities of the improved quality of life, the improved home comfort that you get from having a more efficient home. And we're really trying to focus these efforts on those impacted communities. And then one last quick point is, one aspect of environmental justice and health is also the reliability of our electric system and ensuring that we don't end up in the same situation that we just saw in Texas as a result of the winter slash spring storm. I guess it was in February, with hundreds dead and many millions of dollars in damage, and primarily the people who were affected by this, both from the health side and from the property damage side, are on the lower income, are in the lower income communities and the historically disadvantaged communities. So it's really important that we're keeping that in mind too, and ensuring the reliability of this system. And that really is a primary focus of the Michigan Public Service Commission, and it is directly in our mission statement.
Thank you. And Director Clark, you've spent a lot of time in the Upper Peninsula as part of the UP Energy Task Force work, in part inspired by really, I think, looking at how we can replace the propane in Line 5 to the UP and more broadly looking at the future of energy in the Upper Peninsula. What are some of the big takeaways about that you've learned from all of that work, all of that research, and especially around reliable heating sources to the UP to replace Line 5? Or if it was shut down, I should say.
Yeah, UP Energy Task Force was such a wonderful opportunity. I hope that some of your listeners have been participating in that. Frankly, the Dam Safety Task Force was also a really fantastic educational experience. So, and as is the Climate Council. So we're trying to make sure that all of these materials are available. If you've missed anything and you're interested in catching up, it's all on our website. Everything's recorded. But just, UP Energy Task Force in particular, what a great learning opportunity. And I think for me, one of the biggest takeaways was reinforcing the interconnectedness of energy because of how much there is overlap, between all different components of the energy sector and, the Upper Peninsula itself being such a complex ecosystem for energy. So some of my big takeaways, not all UP energy is expensive. So that was one of the early talking points that we were wanting to dig into a bit to understand. So industrial rates typically are low in the Upper Peninsula. And then there's a wide range of prices for commercial industrial customers. And, it looks very different for residential customers, but you've got 16 different electricity utilities servicing people in the Upper Peninsula. So you do have a pretty wide swath of experiences for those Upper Peninsula residents. And then, when you think about it, just in kind of our big bucket categories from a buildings perspective, you have housing stock and building stock that is typically older, and lots of opportunity for energy waste reduction. And when you think about energy waste reduction, at the end of the year, municipals and co-ops are no longer going to be under our energy waste reduction statute. So that's a concern for me when you think about that requirement, that mandate to do energy waste reduction and how much of that building stock in the Upper Peninsula can really benefit from that. That's a policy concern for me. Also, we spent a lot of time talking about heat pumps. And I think that's something that the heat pump technology is really fascinating. I know there's been more and more uptake in different parts of Michigan, but spending a little bit of time on heat pumps and heat exchanges is time really well spent to understand kind of the direction of where our home comfort is going. From a transportation perspective, you know, just look at the Ford announcements from last week. We're beginning to see a real, I think, inflection point from a transportation perspective. And while we lack charging infrastructure in the Upper Peninsula, we are going to start to see that transition as well. It's probably going to look a little bit different than it does for the Lower Peninsula, but it's something we need to be thinking about and need to be understanding. On a generation side, there's no coal generation in the Upper Peninsula. So that transition happens through the course of the last few years. We're beginning to see more and more renewables proving to be cross-effective in the Upper Peninsula, but siting has been a challenge up there. So that's something that's going to continue to be a balance that we will see play out. And again, as I mentioned, you know, I do have concerns about that energy waste reduction mandate running out for municipals and co-ops. You know, as we see more and more push towards electrification, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the Upper Peninsula. Increasing electricity sales will help dilute rates, which I think is important. But you know, we'll see it all play out, and you know, there could be other benefits for investing in electrification, opportunities for expansion of local trade, local labor, and local supply chain. So you know, a lot of interesting overlap in the Upper Peninsula. And then I should mention too that there's been a real active push from the state perspective to put into place recommendations that came out of the first version of that report, which was more focused specifically on if there was a disruption to propane distribution in the state. And so the state's been working on, you know, what changes can happen to our own internal processes around what the state purchases, but then also where are there opportunities to deploy some of those recommendations early, like looking at additional statutory protection for price gouging, but most importantly, is there an opportunity for expansion of storage? We think there is, to allow for greater price arbitrage to protect residents of the state. So lots of things in play. Again, I really think that interconnectedness of energy is such an important takeaway, particularly when you are carving out a geography in the state to really focus on.
Great, thank you. And a question for both of you. As we look at the federal government talking about, you know, the American Jobs and Family Plan, which would, you know, be the package that would have more infrastructure investments for clean energy and water, and also for human services like childcare. We're going to have some federal speakers tomorrow, and we're going to get their perspective on this. But from the state's perspective, what do you think? I mean, this, you know, could be a, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity for these, for this kind of investment. What do you think are some of the most important things that could come of this, especially related to climate and clean energy? And also, what are some potential landmines or considerations that you could foresee? So, Commissioner Peretick, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. You know, I think it's a really exciting plan. And I think one of the biggest takeaways really from the American Jobs Plan is the focus on climate and environmental justice in all that we do. And we've spent a good amount of time talking about this, but the need really to ensure focus on addressing these longstanding and persistent racial injustices that have been happening. And how do we bring benefit to these communities of color in Michigan. Another aspect I think is really the consideration of rural and tribal communities and communities that are impacted by the market-based transition to clean energy. You know, we have a lot of our state that's rural with limited transportation, limited communications, limited broadband. That's a huge issue, I think, especially in light of 2020. And various energy options, you know, that really need to be front of mind. Keeping Michigan front of mind in that way. While at the same time, you know, customers are really interested in taking more control of their energy usage. And with the needs to address climate change, there's a broad interest in cleaner, more sustainable energy resources. Clean energy is the fastest growing industry in America. And I think that the American Jobs Plan really acknowledges that. And it provides a significant opportunity for high quality jobs. And we need to make sure that Michigan's unique needs are concerned or are considered, excuse me. And one of the ways that that we're doing this, like Lieutenant Governor Gilchrist mentioned, is through the Energy Transition Impact Program, which I think is hugely successful and hugely important. Now, with Michigan's looking at the Surah Michigan lens, I think it's important to keep in mind our unique resource mix as we transition to clean energy and position ourselves as being a leader in climate resiliency, like I talked about last, and the impending transition. We as a state have a long ways to go, but we are further along than a lot of other places, which I think it's important to acknowledge the advantage that that puts us in particular for certainty for economic development. So think about like a large industrial or a large energy user who might be looking to where to site their next maybe EV manufacturing or battery manufacturing facility. I think Michigan is at an advantage in that we'll have more rate certainty as we go through this this impending transition, this energy transition, as opposed to states who are not that far along in their transition path and maybe who still rely heavily on outdated technologies or on technologies that we know are going to be transitioned out of our energy mix. So, we are planning ahead and we have those renewables already built in. And I think that we need to be emphasizing that, and we need to be putting that at the front of our thoughts. And just one more quick thing to note on that. Director Clark mentioned that Ford's announcements last week, and I think that we really do have a strength as an automotive industry state. We can use our engineering, our manufacturing, our innovation resources for electric vehicles really to our advantage. And the Ford's F-150 Lightning that was revealed this past Wednesday is a perfect example, I think, of this confluence of Michigan's genius. Electric vehicles are not dependent on fossil fuels. They are, or they don't have to be once we clean up our grid. the F-150 in particular is designed and manufactured in Michigan, in Dearborn. I think it has a lower price point than many people expected. But the part that I am the most excited about, being an electric grid nerd, is the fact that it can act as your home electricity backup for up to 3 days. Really acting as your own little personal power plant that you can plug into your garage, plug into your home, and you have that personal reliability and resiliency. And I think that that's just such a good example of the innovation that can come out of our state.
Thank you, and I love that. I love that you said the confluence of Michigan's genius too. That's just beautiful. That's great. And Director Clark, what about you? With the American Jobs Plan, and also just other opportunities and challenges that you foresee in the coming year or two.
Since Commissioner Peretick did such a wonderful job talking about climate clean energy as part of the American Jobs Plan, I'm going to focus on water because I know that we all understand that nexus between climate and energy and water and how important it is for all of us in Michigan. And so, Governor Whitmer wrote a letter with other Midwestern state governors who also have the challenges that we have around water infrastructure and the just decades long of disinvestment. And so she's been pushing the My Clean Water Plan, which she's announced in the fall, which was $500 million of commitment to water infrastructure. And it pains me to say that it's just a drop in the bucket in terms of how much investment we need in our water infrastructure in the state. And so we're really excited about an opportunity to partner with our friends, not only at the state level, because this is absolutely an area with bipartisan interest, but also with our friends at the federal level, and hopefully see some additional dollars that are available for things like lead service line, for PFAS research, for additional broader water infrastructure around clean water, making sure that we're thinking about source water protection as well as delivery systems so that it's something that We can help improve around affordability issues in the state as well. So lots of opportunity here for water investment, and something that we're really excited that our federal partners are focused on too. So we do, you know, have lots of hope. I think that the announcement coming out of the state last week, that there is some meeting of the minds around a budget process going forward, is really just going to help us create the momentum for getting these programs in place. And then I'm going to need all of you, because one of the things that I'm super concerned about is getting these dollars out the door effectively and efficiently. And in order to get that to happen quickly, we're going to need people to make sure that they are able to have eyes on what it is that we're doing. This is a huge additional influx of dollars potentially. And so when I think about it parochially from what Eagle is able to do, I know that I'm going to need more resources in order to get those dollars out the door. So I just want to put a bee in everybody's bonnet about that too. It's something that we're going to have to talk about as we get to the appropriations process. But I don't want to slow anything down. We're really excited about the momentum and excited about the ability to get even more dollars out to the locals, because that's really what this is it's getting dollars out to people on the streets so that we can make those improvements in communities. So way back to what the LG said at the beginning, the people that really understand these problems are the people that are closest to them. And the same thing's true with water infrastructure. We just want to get the dollars out the door so that they can really help people. So excited about that, and excited about that opportunity for overlap.
Thank you, Director Clark. And thank you, Commissioner Peretic, both of you, for taking the time to be with us today and for all of your work.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was fun.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Speaking of Resilience podcast. You can find more episodes of the Speaking of Resilience podcast at our website, groundworkcenter.org/podcast, miclimateaction.org/podcast, or on all major podcast platforms. If you appreciate this content and want more of it, stay up to date by subscribing to the podcast wherever you listen in. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a review. This helps other listeners find the Speaking of Resilient podcast. Like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at Groundwork Center and at MI Climate Action. Speaking of Resilience is created by the Groundwork Center for Resilient Communities and the Michigan Climate Action Network. This episode was produced by Taylor Kramer of Cold Shower Media in collaboration with Nick Loud of the Boardman Review.